When it comes to the war in Yemen, the U.S. has played a duplicitous role. The latest example, it has told the U.N. that a draft resolution demanding a truce in Yemen should be put on hold until peace talks are held in Sweden early December. In this edition of The Debate, we will look at why the U.S. is carrying out this strategy, somewhat of a delaying tactic, which points to wanting a military solution when the almost four-year-old war has resulted in a stalemate.
As the conflict rages on in the Yemeni port city of Hodeidah between Saudi-backed forces and Ansarullah fighters, the main losers seem to be civilians who find extreme difficulty in access to food and other basic necessities. The war has left millions on the brink of starvation and unleashed what the United Nations has described as the world's worst humanitarian crisis. In the latest statement, the UN Food Agency sounded the alarm over a sharp decrease of food imports to Yemen due to insecurity in Hodeidah port.
Over the past 2 weeks, operations in Hodeidah port have decreased by 47%. Shipping companies appear to be reluctant to call Hodeidah port because of high level of insecurity in the city. As 70% of imports come to Hodeidah port, a decrease in food coming to this port would likely to impact food stock countrywide.
The spokesman for the World Food Program said any disruptions to the port operations would hamper humanitarian efforts to prevent famine in the country. Verhussel added that if the situation persisted or further deteriorated, it would have a drastic impact on food availability and prices in the market. Meanwhile, some countries like the United States are throwing a monkey wrench into humanitarian plans. Just weeks ago, Washington called for a ceasefire in Hodeidah and threw its weight behind a UN-led effort to hold peace talks. But on Tuesday, the U.S. changed its stance and told the UN Security Council to put on hold a draft resolution that demands truce in the war-torn country. The U.S. mission said it wanted to take into account the results of the upcoming peace talks on Yemen in order to offer comments on the draft resolution. Analysts say the U.S. is only buying time for the Saudi-backed forces to achieve their goals in Yemen.
I know that they are still trying to give Saudi Arabia time to do what they want to do around in Hodeidah, because the Saudis are desperate to get Hodeidah in order to further their agenda to Bab al-Mandab, and that's not happening. So the next best thing is to put a stop to this resolution. Now, the thing that surprises me the most is that it is because of this resolution the peace talks will take place.
The U.S. is also still unwilling to cut its arms sales to the kingdom, despite numerous calls to do so. So far, more than 15,000 Yemeni people have been killed, mostly civilians, since the Saudi-led coalition launched a war campaign against the impoverished nation in 2015. It remains unclear how many more loss of innocent lives will force the West, especially the United States, to take serious action to stop the ongoing mayhem in Yemen.
Our guest joining us for this edition of The Debate, we have Catherine Shugdam, senior researcher at the Al Bayan Center for Planning and Studies, who joins us from London. Catherine Shugdam, welcome. You have the U.S., which on Tuesday, November 27, told the U.N. Security Council that a draft resolution demanding a truce in Yemen should be put on hold. What intentions do you think the U.S. has by making that statement?
Well, I think I'm going to repeat what your previous guest said, is that the U.S. is trying to buy Saudi Arabia's time. I don't think it's for the reason that, you know, we automatically assume. I think that the main goal here is, because I think that Saudi realized by now that it has actually lost the war in Yemen, and it has done so for quite some time. What it's trying to do is actually map out its next move, and that would mean to find a political solution to the war in Yemen. And that would mean essentially having to be forced to consider Ansar Allah, the resistance movement in Yemen, and allow it to become part of the political landscape in Yemen. And that Saudi Arabia does not want to do. So what it's trying to do is exactly spend, you know, the entirety of Ansar Allah's movement forces on the ground in Hodeidah by forcing it to engage against its military and forcing it, you know, to suffer great many losses in terms of its manpower. So that, you know, its power would be spent on the ground, and it would not offer any kind of resistance once Saudi Arabia would try to dictate, a political future for Yemen. So I think it's, the scheme is rather nefarious and quite, despicable, because, you know, now that Saudi Arabia has essentially destroyed Yemen's civilian infrastructures and has laid waste and put back Yemen decades, if not more, in terms of progress and the way that the country would be able to formulate any form of a future, economically speaking. And that is trying to actually disappear its political future by ensuring that, you know, whatever factions on the ground are completely obliterated and have little to offer in terms of resistance once, you know, the UN and other, the entirety of the international community gets involved in terms of solving the crisis and trying to move Yemen to its next chapter politically and institutionally. So we need to be very careful here, because it's not just about a military victory now. It's really about the future of Yemen. And I think that Ansar Allah is very aware of this reality, but at the same time, there's very little he can do, because he cannot, of course, just give up Hodeidah and allow for the Saudi to invade Yemen completely. Because that would be a defeat as well. So it's a very difficult situation that Yemen's resistance finds itself into, and they're going to have to maneuver it.
Well, let me bring in Michael Lane, founder of the American Institute for Foreign Policy, who joins us from Washington, D.C. Michael Lane, welcome. We're looking at this draft resolution. It was a text that was presented by the U.K. last week, and among other things, it called for an immediate truce in Yemen's port city of Hodeidah. Now, this draft resolution took aim to take action on this humanitarian crisis of untold proportions at this point. Isn't the U.S. concerned that its action in putting a stop to this for now, or putting it on hold, risks more lives being lost?
Thank you for having me. I apologize for being late. Traffic in Washington today is inexplicably bizarre. I would like to observe here that at first glance, the request of the U.S. to put this resolution on hold may seem very quizzical or almost impossible to understand. But you have to look, I think, at the larger objective. And the larger objective is to get the parties to the peace table in Sweden next month. So is it a confidence-building step for the parties to agree to and observe a ceasefire on the way to the on the way to the peace talks? And the answer is yes, probably. But is it a necessary step? I think that we would all agree that in the larger picture, disaster is looming. But in the smaller picture, as long as the parties get to Stockholm, and as long as we have a ceasefire by that time when the peace talks go on, that we will avoid the disaster that is looming over us right now. So very cynically, I would note that the intermittent fighting in Hodeidah now seems to be going ever so marginally in the way of the coalition forces. I believe that the United States would like its ally, Saudi Arabia, who is backing the Hadi government to be restored to the presidency of Yemen, we would like them to be in as strong a position as possible when the peace talks begin in Sweden. And so therefore, one of the cynical reasons that you probably cannot legitimately deny is that we are giving the coalition a very small window to continue to advance its position in advance of the peace talks. Uh-huh. If this leads to the peace talks happening, no harm, no foul. If, on the other hand, it leads to the delay or the fact that the peace talks don't actually come together, then that would be a very significant step backwards.
Catherine Chukdam.
I mean, no harm, no foul. I'm pretty sure that the people dying on the ground would actually disagree with you. I'm sorry to say, but again, you know, it's exactly a bit, by the way, you actually repeated what I just said, except you said it differently, that America is going to sit by and watch people die for no good reason other than the will of Saudi Arabia for the sake of restoring a government that doesn't exist anymore. You know, when we talk about Hadi's legitimacy and Hadi's government, I mean, what government are we talking about? The man was elected in a one-man election. He was not democratically elected by any, you know, stretch of the imagination. And yet we're supposed to believe that even though he resigned twice on live television and ran away and is essentially deserted his country, that he has, you know, some form of a right to Yemen. I mean, this is ridiculous. I mean, years have gone by. If anything, the man should retire and actually, you know, do us a favor and pretend to not exist anymore, because all he has done, I mean, the you know, his political career has amounted to the death of millions of people. So enough with the Hadi government and this pathetic excuse, you know, that is, you know, Saudi Arabia has continued to use to genocide an entire people in Yemen. This is ridiculous. To say that, yes, I actually agree with you. America is trying to give its allies a window of opportunity, but that means that millions of people stand to die. And I don't think that we can justify this. Even the UN doesn't have the stomach for it. The international community doesn't have the stomach for it. And yet Washington is pushing for, you know, for a genocide, essentially, because it suits the Saudis. So, I mean, I don't know how you can defend this. This is not pragmatism. This is, you know, this is a crime against humanity. I don't think that you could justify anything that you just said and say that it's politically correct. It's not. It's you know, humanly revolting, and I cannot believe that you find a way to justify it and actually stand there and think that it's okay to say those things. It's not okay. I'm sorry to say, but it's not okay. Life, you know, is worthy to be defended. You know, it is, you know, this kind of moral relativism, because it's linked to geography somehow, and that it's okay for the Middle East to be bleeding its children in its future, doesn't stand for me anymore. You know, you cannot stand on certain principle and claim democracy for yourself and human rights for yourself when you allow those things to happen on the ground in Yemen, because it's Yemen and it's expected somehow. It's not. Those people deserve a future, and whether you like it or not, the resistance movement represents that future that people are trying to formulate. And when we're talking about a ceasefire, I would agree if we were in a normal, I would say, military situation where two countries are actually at war with each other. But what you have is a case of one country, Saudi Arabia, trying to invade Yemen, and Yemen, being a sovereign nation, trying to defend its country. So if anyone needs to stop, it's Saudi Arabia. Yemen will automatically stop, because Yemen is not an aggressor. Yemen is trying to defend itself against a Saudi aggression. So we need to put things back in perspective here, and to stop somehow assuming that we have two parties at war, you know, trying to fight over some kind of a piece of cake. There is no cake to be had. Yemen is a sovereign nation and has the right, I'm sorry, under international to defend its borders. It's ridiculous to believe, for example, if you were to go back in history, did France ask for permission when it was invaded by Germany to actually fight back and resist oppression? No, it did not. It was actually hailed a hero because it managed to fight Nazi Germany. So why can't we give Yemen the same courtesy? I do not understand, and I would like an explanation.
Michael Lane, explanation.
Yeah, well, three things. Number one, the dates we're talking about for the start of the peace talks are not 6 months away, are not even 3 months away. We're talking the opening date is possibly less than 1 week away. It might be a little bit longer than that, but it might be December
3rd. People are dying every 10 minutes.
So we're not talking about a humanitarian disaster happening in the next five days. The second thing is the ceasefire can take place anytime the Houthis want to declare a unilateral ceasefire. They can do so, and the humanitarian aid will start flowing through the port within 24 hours. So, you know, really no big deal there. And the third thing is that, you know, the United States is not advocating any humanitarian disaster. In fact, it's the United States who has pushed and pushed very publicly and very hard Saudi Arabia and the coalition into agreeing that the Hadi government ought to attend these talks and participate with the opposition in the talks to find a political solution to the problems that we find in Yemen now. And I think it's a little bit elementary to just dismiss the role of the Hadi government, because it is the internationally recognized legitimate government of the people of Yemen.
Well, I'm trying to understand, Catherine Shugdam, when Michael Lane speaks there, and I'm sure he's trying to convince through his statements the intention that the U.S. has behind not only this particular latest move that they've done in terms of putting this text on hold that the U.K. presented. Well, at the same time, you have members of the Senate, of the U.S. Senate, who were just briefing their fellow lawmakers, trying to convince each other. But really not even that. They're trying to convince, I think, just the Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and the Secretary of Defense James Mattis, that right now we need to not go after Saudi Arabia, not downgrade our ties, because, no, Saudi Arabia is not involved in the assassination of, well, through its MBS of Khashoggi. When there's no unity in the American camp, how can then there be a unity on this war in Yemen? That it seems like it's just a Trump, Pompeo, maybe Bolton, and of course Saudi Arabia, who are aggressively pursuing it.
Well, I think it's true. I mean, I think we have, there's a great divide in Washington, whereas, you know, you have, you know, certain parties, I mean, you know, Republican and Democrats on both sides who actually understand that, you know, United States of America is sitting on the wrong side of history when it comes to Yemen. And that its ties with Saudi Arabia needs to be dialed back a little bit, and they need to reassess the situation because they have befriended a very, I would say, dangerous tyrant, let's put it this way. And I don't think that President Trump understands, or maybe he doesn't care, quite simply. I mean, as your guest mentioned, it's no big deal. When a child dies every 10 minutes, if not more often, you know, it's not a big deal. But then again, if it's an American life, then everyone has to cry and stop breathing for 5 minutes, you know, if one person dies or 10 people die. But when it's in Yemen, it's not a problem, not a big deal, as you said. It's not a catastrophe. It is a catastrophe when you lose your child. It is a catastrophe for you when you lose your husband or your wife or your sister or your uncle or your brother. It is the catastrophe. Life literally ends. It is the end of the world for those people. And yet you don't seem to care. They have suffered since March 2015, and you don't seem to care, sir. And I just find this profoundly despicable. We're talking about real people, real lives, and you know their future is being forfeited because you are decidedly pragmatic in your views. And you decide to support people who are unsupportable. You decide to support people who are absolutely despicable in their humanity, and you do not care for life. I mean, as you mentioned earlier, you know, the Khashoggi case, I think it's rather clear that if Saudi Arabia is willing to kill one of its elite, you know, in Turkey, then, you know, why not, you know, kill a few million people in Yemen if it suits the agenda? And why not have America support it and actually offer carte blanche and cover? Why not fund the war? Why not train, you know, radical militants and open up the entirety of the Middle East so that America could have its military bases, so that America could actually funnel natural resources away from sovereign nations? Why not have this? It's not a big deal. It's not a big deal when millions of people in Syria have been displaced or killed. It's not a big deal when millions of people have been displaced and killed in Iraq. It's not a big deal at all. Indeed, sir, it's not a big deal.
Michael Lane, our guest there mentioned how a child dies every 10 minutes, I believe, is what you said, in Yemen. There's obviously a humanitarian catastrophe. I think you agree on that issue. Now, just to look at how important time is, October 30th, 2018. I'm sorry, go ahead. What did you say? I didn't hear you.
I was just going to note that, yes, I take fully seriously the loss of any life. So much as one death that might be prevented is a very, very good thing. I was measuring the scale of things. When we're looking at a humanitarian crisis of such proportion that we're talking about 6 million plus people versus another week worth of fighting and the casualties that result of that, the grand scale, the two things are just not compatible. That was my point, and I think my colleague, you know, really tried to twist that out of proportion.
No, well, I'm not. You're actually insisting on making the wrong point, but okay. I you know, whatever.
Well, this is the thing. In terms of a commitment that was made back October 30th, the U.S. Secretary of Defense, Michael Lane, James Mattis, set a 30-day deadline for the ceasefire. Now, today's the 28th, give or take a couple days here and there. We're looking at this to have expired, this 30-day. It doesn't quite match the U.S. time frame at this point. And now we're having this text that the U.S. says has to be put on hold. And as you said, another week to go by. You can see where I'm going with this regarding the humanitarian aspect of this. And from the outside looking in, some are saying, is this a delaying tactic for Saudi Arabia and its coalition to gain as much ground, A, and B, perhaps, in their minds, maybe they can defeat the Ansar al-Fighters, which... Well, after all these years, I don't know how they can think that. Do you think that's the case?
Right. Well, let me say I think that an outright military victory in the foreseeable future is just not going to happen. So we can put that one to bed. The first part of your question, which was, will an incremental amount of time provide the coalition with the time and the opportunity it needs to advance its position in advance of the talks? Quite possibly, and that could certainly be a factor. When Secretary Mattis announced that he would like to see a ceasefire within 30 days, that was aspirational. That wasn't a dictating of terms to the parties involved. That wasn't the official U.S. position. That was, okay, I'd really like to see this happen within the next 30 days. We're talking about a window plus or minus. If this goes another, if we're in the middle of next year, or let's just say the middle of the second month of next year, and we haven't gotten any place, that would be a failure of the opportunity to bring the whole thing to the conference table. But if we are in negotiations sometime in the month of December, I would say that relatively is a success compared to where we were 30 days ago.
Well, that's another whole dimension to Mattis's intentions, Catherine Strigdom. When you have the U.S., major supporter of Saudi Arabia, giving it 30 days, one would say, a question that would come up, I don't know if you agree, Catherine Strigdom, why not announce a ceasefire immediately? Why wait 30 days where we have had more deaths accumulate in the past 30 days and still counting? Do you see the U.S. using time as a delaying tactic, Catherine Strigdom, here?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think because, from a military perspective, Yemen's war has been lost as far as the Saudi are concerned. So now they're trying to actually, salvage some kind of a political future, so that in order to angle their own people and be able to impose, some of their patties, I would say, onto Yemen and ensure that Saudi Arabia will have a voice in Yemen. And of course, right now it's not looking really good because, of course, nobody really likes Saudi Arabia, having suffered under its hand for several years. And the resistance movement is rather popular. So now when I say the resistance movement, I'm talking about all the different, political factions and tribes that constitute the resistance movement. So, you have like real pluralism within the resistance movement. And those people, of course, are waiting to go around and sit together at a table and actually formulate Yemen's future. This is something that terrifies, Saudi Arabia, because can you imagine having a democracy right south of its border? It's a bad idea. Especially if you look at what is happening in the region altogether. I mean, you have Bahrain, Bahrain is trying to build itself a democracy. And then you have those breaks within the GCC countries. So again, it's not looking really good for Saudi Arabia, because it is losing a great deal of political footing in the immediate region. And then, of course, there is Iraq and Syria and Lebanon, and a great many deals of changes across the region. And again, Saudi Arabia is not positioned really well as far as changes are concerned, and it's losing ground quite quickly. So Yemen has been a blow, and Yemen in many ways is looking very much like, for Saudi Arabia to be Russia's Afghanistan. And I think that maybe Washington wants to salvage the unsalvable, what is not salvable, or maybe it's trying to sell some more weapons before Mohammed bin Salman is, has to buy himself a ticket out of Saudi Arabia. Who knows? But in any case, I think that Washington is looking after its own interests and not so much those of Saudi Arabia or even Yemen, for sure, not Yemen.
Unfortunately, we're fresh out of time. Let me thank our guest, Catherine Strigdom, senior researcher at the Al Bayan Center for Planning and Studies. Thank you for your comments. And Michael Lane, thank you, founder of the American Institute for Foreign Policy. Pleasure to have you. Thank you for tuning into another edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Vitavoy and the entire team in the capital of Tehran, it's goodbye.